This is North Central Alabama's station, your NPR news station, 90.3 WBHM Birmingham and 91.5 WSGN Gadsden. Good evening, I'm Steve Chiatakis, 6:30 now, and it is WBHM's On the Line program. Over the next hour, we're going to ask you to hold your breath. No, not really. What we actually want you to do is imagine not having the air, clean air, essential to life, available to you. Tonight, our panel of guests, with help from your calls and your emails, will examine Birmingham's air quality woes, looking at the history, the health, and the transportation effects of unhealthy air. And you can get in on the conversation, too, by calling toll-free 1-800-444-9246 or emailing us news, N-E-W-S, at WBHM.org. That's N-E-W-S at WBHM.org. Want to introduce our guests in just a moment. Interestingly, as you heard Andrew mention just a moment ago, tomorrow will be another air quality alert day for the immediate Birmingham area. Ozone will be the main culprit, with particulate matter in the moderate range tomorrow. If you have sensitivity to smog or have respiratory issues, you should limit your time outside. You'll hear a lot of that tomorrow on other media outlets, including ours here. And there have been a couple of other air quality alert days so far this month. Most days are moderate, hazy and smoggy, but not dangerously polluted. There haven't been very many good air quality days lately. And joining us in the studio to discuss air quality in the Birmingham area are Jenny Dorgan, Program Coordinator with the Alabama Environmental Council. Jenny, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
We appreciate you being with us. Willard Bowers is Vice President of Environmental Affairs for Alabama Power. Willard, thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Corey Masuka is Senior Air Pollution Control Engineer at the Jefferson County Department of Health's Air and Radiation Protection Division. That's a long title right there, but I guess it means that you do a lot of work over there, right?
Oh, yes. We're very busy.
Thank you, Corey. We appreciate it. Also joining us in the studio, Nelson Brook, the Executive Director of the Black Warrior River Keeper. You might be asking yourself, I thought we were talking about air pollution tonight. Well, air pollution affects the water too, believe it or not, and vice versa in some cases. And Nelson Brook, we thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right. I want to start the segment and talk a little bit about history. Again, the phone number, 1-800-444-9246, 1-800-444-WBHM, or email your questions, news, N-E-W-S, at WBHM.org. Birmingham air quality history is smoke-filled and hazy. We all know the old days, right? We've seen the pictures, Sloss furnaces, all the foundries, the old Tennessee coal and iron from way back when, U.S. Steel, and it's smoky, and you see all the haze in Jones Valley. The city was born out of a railroad intersection. Those locomotives put out a ton of pollution, and so did the smokestacks from the foundries and the furnaces that produced a product that was sold the world over, iron, also steel, not to mention coal and strip mining. So I'm going to ask the first question to you, Corey Masuka. How much does Birmingham's past, do you think, play into this idea that pollution's not bad considering it was a lot worse years ago? You know, we've made a lot of strides over the past few years, or in the past 10, 20, 30 years. So, you know, why not be satisfied with what we have right now?
I think you're exactly right. We have typically had a real bad problem with respect to air pollution because of the industry here in Birmingham and Jefferson County. However, with the advent of regulations by EPA and other agencies, we have seen controls that effectively have reduced the air pollutant levels of different pollutants. We still have a long way to go because there are still studies that show that there are health effects even from lower levels of air pollutants. But compared to 20 or 30 years ago, things have gotten a lot better.
Things are a lot better right now, but you look at other cities as well, and I'll just pull one out of the hat, Atlanta.
Yes.
It's car city in Atlanta. If you drive to Atlanta, you know you're going to be stuck somewhere.
Exactly.
Urban sprawl, does that have a lot to do, do you think, today? We're not making as much, or if we are, it's not polluting as much. Is this cause and effect? You know, we're building more further out, so we have more pollution because of cars?
I think cars, mobile sources do have a fairly significant contribution to the overall pollutant burden in Birmingham and Jefferson County. And with more people driving and with people commuting longer distances, you do see more pollution from cars, and that could be related to urban sprawl.
We're going to talk a little bit about urban sprawl a little bit later in the program. I do want to talk a little bit about, obviously, the effects that other pollutants have in our air, not necessarily smokestacks causing pollution. A lot of the emissions coming from coal-fired steam plants, electricity generators that are run by Alabama Power, the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA. What did we know about these plants, Willard Bowers, and their contributions to air pollution when they first came online. And what do we know now? What were they saying when they first came online, you know, that perhaps the effects of these plants would be a little detrimental?
I think you go back to the early 70s. And in the early 70s, when the National Ambient Air Quality Standards were first put in place, the Birmingham area had a history of non-attainment of the sulfur dioxide standard,
right.
SO2. It also had a history of non-attainment with particulates. Particulate sources came from a lot of areas, including power plants. Ozone has been and I guess continues to be an issue in the Birmingham area relative to attainment. If you look at the history of what we have done, since the early 70s, sulfur dioxide, as far as the level of sulfur dioxide in the ambient air in the Birmingham area, is well below what is called the National Ambient Air Quality Standard.
Mm-hmm.
Particulates, we have achieved compliance with a particulate standard, and then it was changed from a coarse particle standard to a 5 microgram standard, and that required a different type of control, and now we're dealing with what is called a fine particle, and that will require, again, a different type of control strategy. So we have seen emission reductions from power plants, and most recently, NOx has been associated with power plants as a contribution to the level of ozone. And prior to 1995, the control strategy to control ozone was to address volatile organic compounds.
Mm-hmm.
And volatile organic compounds are not emitted by power plants. In 1995, when Birmingham saw a violation of the ozone standard, attention turned to looking at NOx emissions from power plants. And since 1995, we have installed controls on these power plants.
This is the SCR controls?
Yes, these are SCR controls.
Yeah.
And the reduction in NOx emissions is well over 50%.
I want to talk more about the SCR controls as well,
sure.
Something that we touched on years ago when they were being placed and retrofitted on those plants. We're talking Gorgas and Miller, right?
Well, Gorgas, Miller, Gaston.
Gaston and Wilsonville, yeah.
That's correct.
We have a question on the line right now, and you're joining us here on 90.3 WBHM. Hello.
Hello, my name is Blue, and I'm calling from Bessemer. My question in regards to air quality is, periodically, if you pass through Jonesboro Valley and you see U.S. Steel and sometimes the flames that are coming from the top of some of those furnaces, I'm curious as to whether or not any study has been done as to how many pollutants are actually emitted, and also if the fact that traditionally that flame is seen at night, if them processing the materials they process, if them doing it at night possibly helps or hurts the community or the air quality as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Who wants to address that? Corey?
Yes. May flame may be particularly a control device called a flare that's usually used to combust gases from different processes.
You see this from the skyline, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the flare is an actual destruction control device. It does appear to be very bad, but in fact it is a pollutant-destroying device. No particular studies have been done for that facility, but we do, at the local agency, assure full compliance of all the rules and regulations that apply to that particular facility, yes, still.
Pollutant-destroying device?
Yes.
So it's actually an air pollution destroyer. It stops the air pollution.
That's correct. Or it breaks up the pollutants into less harmful or pollutants that aren't harmful to the environment.
Has this been tried and true in other areas as well? There hadn't been a study about this particular one you mentioned, but in other places has there been a study?
Flares are typically a standard control device for certain processes. These control devices are approved by EPA. They're proven among the most proven and good methods for destroying certain types of gases prior to the release into the atmosphere. So it's a well-documented, well-studied technique for destroying some type of gases, some pollutants and gases.
If I'm driving back from, say, Tuscaloosa on I-59, and I have my windows down, say it's a nice, crisp, cool day, and there was a football game down the road or something like that, and I'm coming back through Fairfield, Midfield, those areas, and you know it. You take a whiff, and it's not the most pleasant aroma.
Right.
What is that?
I'm not particularly aware. It could be a number of things. It could be a particulate matter. Could be a combination of volatile organic compounds. We do have a lot of different, receive a lot of complaints from different industries around the county. And while we do try to respond to all the complaints and address all the complaints, inherently there are going to be some emissions that do come from facilities and that do affect communities and neighbors in communities. However, our purpose is to try to minimize or reduce the exposure, but we definitely can't eliminate all the pollutants that do come from some of these facilities.
So suffice it to say that if I'm smelling something foul, chances are it's not very good for me.
That could be an accurate statement.
So we'll just roll up the windows then. Is that what we're going to do?
Well, again, you know, as we advise everyone who does smell particular odor in their community, or definitely if something is occurring, we have a lot of particulate emissions that don't typically occur, to give us a call. We'll promptly send personnel out to the facility to observe the occasion of any upset conditions or anything that's out of par. We definitely respond to any complaints that citizens do send to us.
All right. Nelson Brook, river pollution, as we mentioned with the Black Warrior River Keeper. River pollution is a problem near plants that produce not only electricity, but there are so many other plants. I can think of pulp and paper plants that are along the rivers, lime plants, even iron and steel, among others. There was one lawsuit by the citizens of Coosa Pines, Alabama, alleging that Kimberly-Clark Paper Company contaminated the area with dioxins. Make the connection between river and air pollution.
Well, we're talking a lot about particulate pollution.
Right.
And, of course, particles are heavy and they can fall eventually.
It's matter.
The bigger particles come down quicker. The smaller particles can travel farther. And they're either going to make their way onto the ground or onto local surface water. But even if they make it onto the ground, the next rain that comes along, it's going to wash it right into your surface water. So these pollutants can settle into the bottom, into the sediments. They can also be taken up by fish and other aquatic organisms.
So somebody says, well, the air might be a little dirty, but at least the water is clean. That's not the case.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Give me an example of an area where air pollution has directly affected the quality of water.
Well, as a matter of fact, direct correlations between air and water, it's not actually an issue that we have delved a whole lot into, but all around the country, mercury pollution in our waters is causing fish consumption advisories in streams and lakes. In Alabama and many other states, it's a known problem, and a lot of that mercury pollution is coming from coal-burning power plants. They're known as the largest contributor of mercury pollution in the country.
And especially to pregnant women, correct?
Absolutely.
Tuna. We see that the labels on the tuna.
Mercury bioaccumulates in fish tissue, and then when taken up by humans, can pose a serious danger to women, especially of childbearing age and children. The Centers for Disease Control found that 10% of American women carry mercury concentrations at levels considered to put their children at risk for serious neurological damage.
Wow.
And the National Academy of Sciences, they found that mercury exposure results in approximately 60,000 children born in America each year with the potential to have neurological damage.
1-800-444-9246 if you want in on the conversation, 1-800-444-WBHM. Or you can email if you don't want to talk, if you are a little nervous on the radio. Perhaps you want to email a question to news, N-E-W-S, at WBHM.org. It's 6:45. We do have this one email comment and a question. John wants to know why Alabama doesn't put scrubbers on their stacks. His godson has terrible breathing problems, and scrubbers on the stacks could help make his life a little easier. And I guess I'm going to talk to you about that, Willard Bowers.
We are in the process now of putting scrubbers The first scrubber.
What do scrubbers do?
Well, a scrubber, and I mentioned sulfur dioxide a few minutes ago. Coal has sulfur in it, and when you burn it, you produce the gas, sulfur dioxide. Now, a scrubber will take that and convert it to basically a sulfate, calcium sulfate, that is sheetrock. Same thing used in wallboard.
Right.
We are in the process of putting scrubbers on our power plants now. Since about the year 2000, installing the controls that you mentioned earlier, the selective catalytic reduction systems, and the initial scrubbers, we have spent close to $1 billion.
Is that mandated?
Yes, they are. These are now mandated.
Now mandated. Why not put them on before they were mandated, just to make sure that the air was cleaner?
Number one, as I mentioned earlier, the sulfur dioxide level in the state of Alabama was well below the ambient air quality standard. That was what the regulations were based on, is are you achieving compliance with the ambient air quality standard? Mm-hmm. The level that we will develop between now and the year roughly 2010, we will spend another $1.4 billion placing additional scrubbers on power plants across not only in the Birmingham area, but across the state of Alabama.
So those are coming, and what time frame are we talking about again?
Between now and 2011.
All right, so the next 2 or 3 years. 1-800-444-9246, 1-800-444-WBHM, or an email question at news@wbhm.org. I want to switch topics here and sort of move on from history to the health effects of air quality in the Birmingham area. And I'm going to start with Corey Masuka again. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, there is an air quality alert issued for tomorrow for the immediate Birmingham area. What does your department do to get the word out? What's the process for disseminating all that information?
Well, a number of mechanisms we employ to get the word out. We typically send out news blasts via email indicating the levels, especially alert levels of the air quality in Birmingham, Jefferson County. We also post on the EPA website and different websites the forecast. We do forecasting at the Jefferson County Department of Health along with ADEM, and we put those forecasts out.
ADEM is the Alabama Department of Environmental Management.
Yes,
right?
On the state environmental agency. We also we conduct forecasts and for particulate and ozone, and we place those out on the website, on the EPA website, and other websites on a daily basis. Those are our primary mechanisms of getting the word out.
And the media, of course, parlays that information, too, on the air and on television, newspapers. Willard Bowers, Alabama Power, says it is all about serving customers with affordable electricity. $4 a gallon gas, all we think about is the sour economy right now. Believe me, people want energy on the cheap. And the utility has boasted about putting pollutant-reducing mechanisms in place at those coal-fired steam plants. You talked about the scrubbers and the SCR technology. But critics charge that the power company is exploiting or has exploited congressional grandfather clauses for clean air mandates by spending money on extending the life of those plants, these older coal-fired plants, and not spending money or a lot of money on retrofitting them with the pollution-reducing machines. How do you answer those charges? Is there a balance there, do you think? Or do you think the power company maybe waited too long to do this? I mean, maybe some of these plants should be replaced.
You mentioned the word balance, and I think that's very important. Yes, that's our job, is to balance the level of cost that we incur on behalf of our customers with the improvements that you would see in whatever you're trying to improve. And I go back again to the compliance with the ambient air quality standards. And if you look at the history of measuring the ambient air quality standards in the Birmingham area and the actions that have been taken, they have been taken in order to achieve attainment. Where attainment couldn't be achieved, such as ozone, and then there were activities undertaken to more directly relate NOx emissions from power plants to ozone levels, then we responded. Those programs were not put in place until 1998 and 1999. And by the year 2002, we had put on at Gorgas our first SCR. So we do take action in order to satisfy and achieve compliance with the standards that are promulgated by the Jefferson County Department of Health, Alabama Department of Environmental Management, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
I want to talk about some of these regulations. You guys are above board on the regulations and all that, but we're going to talk a little bit about how those regulations are made in just a moment. Jenny Dorgan, I want to bring you into the conversation. The EPA sued Alabama Power over its Barry steam plant in Mobile, but a federal judge dismissed those charges a couple of years ago. Your organization was part of the effort to force the power company to clean up those plants. What are you doing now to keep their feet to the fire?
Well, we, first of all, would like to say do commend Alabama Power on their efforts to clean up their act. We do realize that they have made a good effort to install the selective catalytic reduction systems, especially at Miller Power Plant. As I understand it, if those had been implemented on some of their units there, they would have cut emissions from the plants by 50% during the summer ozone season. So we commend them for that. But at the same time, those mandated efforts, as you mentioned, Steve, I think could have been put in place to ensure that our air was more healthy for our communities.
Well, you say mandated efforts, so you're talking about congressional action, you're talking about state action, things like that, not necessarily something. Obviously, the power company could have done this earlier, but a company that wants to make money and obviously provide a service, they're not going to be so altruistic to go out there and say, well, we'll go ahead and do this right now if they're not mandated to do it.
Correct.
So why hasn't Congress or state lawmakers, why haven't they gotten involved in this up until now, or perhaps not as hardcore up until now?
Sure. I think it's a good point, and I think that definitely, just in my experience in the environmental movement in Alabama, we have started to see a shift. Most recently, we participated in an energy summit with Archer Davis, Congressman Davis, at on the Tuscaloosa campus, where I personally went to college. And it's a conversation that wouldn't have taken place when I was there. And we are hoping that we'll see some of that conversation take place on a state level. But so far, we have a long way to go.
What is the power company, Willard Bowers, what has the power company done recently to show the people of Alabama that it is serious about cleaning up those plants? I mean, you mentioned the sulfur, the sulfuric. What is it now? The sulfur that's emitted from the coal, correct?
Yes, coal has sulfur.
Right.
When it's burned, then that sulfur will react with the combustion process. You said, what have we done recently? What we have done recently is spend close to $1 billion, and we are going to spend another $1.4 billion by 2010. By the time that we finish the program that we have in place to address the issues that you have raised, we will have invested close to $3 billion. Now, that $3 billion is money that is spent in order to have compliance with the rules and regulations to do the things that have to be done. And also, that money is money that goes into the rate base, which the customers of Alabama Power Company pay.
We have an email question to you, Mr. Bowers. What percentage of the electrical power generated by Southern Company power plants located in Alabama is actually consumed in Alabama? Do you know the answer to that question?
I don't know the exact answer to that. I do know that Southern Company as a whole is a net importer of power. In other words, we on an annual basis actually wind up having to purchase power in order to meet our customer demands.
Okay.
I would interject that we do, as I understand it, ship away a lot of the energy that is produced here. And the problem that we see with that issue is that the pollution that is produced as a result of producing that energy from coal power plants, it stays here in the community. It doesn't know geographic boundaries, and it doesn't get shipped away with the energy.
Yeah, Miller Steam Plant, one of the dirtier plants in the country, exports to Florida about 47% of its power output.
Okay.
I'd be glad to address that.
Okay, do it, please.
Yes. Miller Steam Plant was contracted by utilities in Florida many years ago. Those utilities entered into contracts to purchase the power from Miller. By entering into those contracts, and those contracts are expiring, and when those contracts expire, then the capacity and energy of Miller Steam Plant will be available to the customers of Alabama without necessitating the additional construction of electrical generating capacity.
We have a question. Do you guys want to respond to that, or Jenny?
I would just say that we feel like industries should be working towards clean and secure energy infrastructure that takes advantage of innovative technologies that are available to us now as a way to create profits in the future. In other words, maybe it's not profitable for Alabama Power, for instance, to move to cleaner renewable technologies, but we see that there's an opportunity to start to have a shift in that direction towards a greener economy.
We want this to be an all-encompassing conversation, too. We don't want to be, you know, knocking Alabama Power all night. You guys aren't the only polluters, and we all pollute in our own ways with cars and everything else. So we want to talk holistically about air quality issues. Go ahead, Mr. Bowers. Talk to me a little bit about what you were about to say.
I basically was through. I mean,
oh, okay. All right. I would say this,
that the investment in technology is something that we have been doing for a long time. Control devices such as SCRs were developed through research that was conducted on the Southern Electric System. Control devices such as scrubbers was developed from research that was conducted in large part on the Southern Electric System. We now have a facility in Wilsonville, Alabama, that is developing a process to gasify coal, which would result in the ability to use coal in a much more effective and a cleaner fashion. So development of technology is something that we have always supported, not only in direct action, but also in funding different types of research to look at those technologies.
One emailer heard that Alabama's Department of Environmental Management, ADEM, as we've talked about earlier, by law cannot issue requirements stricter than the federal government's requirements. Is that true?
No, typically
seems like California.
Locals,
you look at California, they have
stringent,
much stricter emissions controls. I know that.
Yes, they can be stricter than the U.S. EPA can typically.
So that is false.
Yes.
Okay. And it's true that we do have people, citizens who are on the Environmental Management Commission who are interested in seeing some of those regulatory mechanisms be more conscious of health-based regulations rather than technology-based regulations.
I want to move on to our next topic, but Jenny, I want to bring you back in and talk a little bit about how do you get lawmakers sort of on board when they can't even pass the state education budget before the regular session ends. You know, you're talking about school kids,
sure.
You know, but I mean, you know, air pollution as well. How do you address that? And what do you guys do in Montgomery to get that done?
I think it's tough because the environment usually does get put on the back burner in terms of some of the other critical issues that we're looking at in the state. But if we can think about it in terms of the natural heritage and health that we're going to leave to our children in the future. If we don't address these issues, if we don't address it at the state level, then we just need to look at it as mortgaging our children and our grandchildren's future.
There is also another emailer, William, wants to know if your guests are aware of the problem of light pollution, excess or improper lighting that not only wastes energy but also prevents us from seeing the night sky. $4 billion annually in the U.S. for unnecessary lighting. And there's he's talking about the International Dark Sky Association. This is a group that's looking at maybe more projected light onto the streets and not necessarily lights in the sky. A lot of stargazers, of course, are concerned about that as well. Do you want to address that, Mr. Bowers?
I've never done a lot of research on light pollution. I do know that certainly the design of lighting fixtures, the design of efficient lighting, doing things that can allow us to more efficiently use electricity is something that we have been active in. As far as it relating directly to this gentleman's concern, I'm not aware of any research.
Steve, that is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. I'm from the coast of Alabama. And when I go home, one of my favorite things is to be able to see the stars at night. It's not something that our organization is necessarily focused on, but we would agree with you, Willard, that energy efficiency is key And that in a real sense, the air pollution that we're talking about today is a reflection of inefficiency. Here in Alabama, we consume the third highest per capita amount of electricity in the nation.
Third highest in the nation. What's that according to what organization? Can you attribute that?
We have a report that will be available on our website called Clearing the Air that we put out in 2002 with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, and it's got a lot of really great information in it.
Okay. All right. And I know that a lot of those outdoor lights, the street lights out there, are not manufactured, but are leased out by the power company, correct?
There are a lot of lights that we provide under different scenarios. Mm-hmm. Some of them are leased. Some of them the city itself actually purchased. The primary purpose, though, of those type of lights is to improve public safety, whether it's public safety on a highway, whether it's public safety in a neighborhood.
Okay. Another email question. We recognize the air quality problems with coal-fired power plants. You've already discussed some solutions. However, there's another pollutant that she believes is now being regulated by the EPA, which is carbon dioxide, to deal with global warming. It seems reducing the dependence on coal would help reduce all of these harmful pollutants as well as achieve reductions in CO2. What is the power company doing to reduce dependence on coal and develop renewable energy sources for the future?
I go again to the basic development of technology.
What kind of technology, though? What are we talking
about? Well, if you're talking about
said gassing coal, right? Coal to gas.
Coal to gas is a technology that would reduce the number of pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt or kilowatt hour of
electricity. But we're still talking fossil fuels, right?
Yes, that's a fossil fuel. That is a fossil fuel use that would reduce the amount of CO2. The other research that is really necessary is what are other alternative forms of energy that might be used to replace fossil fuels. Now we have nuclear energy. That is something that is a proven energy source, and there are issues that have to be addressed regarding certain aspects of its use.
Such as waste.
Excuse me?
Such as waste.
I think waste is one of the issues, right, that people are looking at. But the development of those types of resources is something that we will have to do if it is society's choice that we're going to go and take drastic measures to reduce a certain pollutant, namely CO2.
I think it's important to note that as a nation, I think we have an opportunity to decrease our dependence on coal-based energy that pollutes our air by working toward a diversified energy portfolio that will implement some of the innovative technologies that we already have at our fingertips. And those types of technologies that we're talking about, moving away from the fossil fuels, are focused on switchgrass and, for instance, other types of biomass being used in cogeneration with the current process.
Can you shed some light, and I guess this goes to Corey perhaps, can you shed some light on what we can expect by the way of air control quality as Birmingham gets ready to expand the vision of loft living in downtown? There are numerous lofts being constructed in future plans for more development. For example, there's Lear Tower in the City Federal Building and all these different lofts coming in. How do all these people affect air quality?
I think you'll see continue to see rises in air pollution within the inner city area. We don't have a particular plan of control for those emissions or increased emissions that may emanate from the inner city as lofts and other residences are expanded downtown. But I think you will continue to see a potential rise in mobile source contributions, primarily from more residents locating downtown, and the pollutants could migrate to other cities and in general cause more pollutant migration to other areas that could affect additional monitors that may, again, result in non-attainment status. But, again, that's not a specific area that we have to address yet at the health department.
You have how many monitors in the Birmingham area?
Approximately 16 monitors.
16.
Excuse me, in the Jefferson County area, approximately 16.
And there's one in Shelby, right?
Yes.
In Helena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the one that
that's the one that's,
it goes over the top problem. So many yes. times mm-hmm. is the Helena monitor in Shelby County. Why is that?
I think it's a number of reasons, but it's been speculated primarily due to the mobile source contributions, but there could be other reasons that we haven't quite got a handle on yet, but there's some speculated large mobile source component to that.
Mobile is in cars.
Yes.
1-800-444-9246, 1-800-444-WBHM. If you want to be a part of this dialogue, this discussion that we're having tonight on the line, talking about air quality in the Birmingham area, we've discussed the history, we've discussed new technology and old polluting technology, fossil fuels to perhaps more innovative design to generate electricity, wherever that may be, whether it be here in the nation or right here in Alabama. But I want to switch and talk a little bit about what Corey just mentioned, the cars. So many cars on the road today. And I'm going to start with you, Jenny, as a matter of fact. We know that another great contributor to air pollution is the gasoline engine. And it's not just cars and trucks, but it's lawnmowers and 18-wheelers and weed eaters. And you name the engine, it's emitting all kinds of pollutants. How difficult is it, do you think, to persuade people to curb their driving habits? Has $4 a gallon gasoline helped solve that problem or helped in that effort?
I think it's had an impact on folks. It's just hearsay, but I hear that sales at local bike shops are pretty good right now. I think that if you can empower people with solutions and not just talk about how frightening these air issues are, but the good news is that we are a nation of movers and shakers. You know, we have those solutions at our fingertips. So if you can break some habits and make sure that when you're driving to work, you're carpooling, if you're close enough, if you can bike to the bus stop and then bike from your bus stop to work, those kinds of things can actually be fun and healthful. So there are fun ways that we can deal with some of these hard issues.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for just a moment.
Sure.
And you don't throw anything across the board or anything, you know, because I'm just asking the questions. But you said it can be fun. I'm not thinking of bike riding on a Birmingham highway or a two-lane road that's not equipped for bicycles as fun. I think of it as dangerous. And Birmingham is not that city that's equipped for walking, riding a bike, mass transit. Mm-hmm. I know there is a bus system in Birmingham, and we've talked about it time and time again, but it's not the most user-friendly system as far as people wanting to go from one place to another. Mm-hmm. It helps the downtown area and other areas, but as far as a regional transit system, it's been lacking for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you address that?
Well, I'm actually very glad that you brought it up, because as someone who participates in that public transportation system, as well as biking on some of our more frightening streets in Birmingham, it's something that needs to be addressed. Bike lanes would be helpful. Public transportation is always going to have room for improvement. In the meantime, if you could just be aware of the bikes that you're passing on the street, because often they're frightened, and it's actually illegal for them to be on the sidewalk, and sometimes the sidewalk is just as dangerous as the road in terms of places where it can just end or go into traffic.
And to be fair, there are greenways that have been created, old railroad beds and tracks, things like that, that mm-hmm. have been converted to walking trails and perhaps even from point A to point B for transportation purposes. But it's still a pretty difficult place to get around if you don't have a car.
It is. It's a very good point.
We do have a call on the line right now. Hello, you're on 90.3 WBHM.
Hi, I'm James. I'm calling from Hoover.
Hi, James.
I was just curious. I know a lot of air pollution comes from automobiles and traffic. I was wondering what our city and Birmingham in general is doing to increase public transportation and decrease the amount of road traffic.
Well, we're talking about the city. Obviously, we've talked mass transit in these discussions before on the air, and I know that it's a pretty contentious issue. And I know the funding for the mass transit system, the MAX system, the Birmingham-Jefferson County Transit Authority, the BJCTA, is not up to par with comparable cities across the country. I mean, that's a fact as far as the millions of dollars. I also know that gasoline prices, I should say the gasoline tax, the state tax, Alabama is one of the few states that does not devote part of that sales tax, it's a gas tax that you pay when you pump gas, toward mass transit. It goes toward road construction. So that's another issue that we've been covering. Does anyone want to add anything to this about mass transit in the Birmingham area?
I would interject that it's important for our callers and people who support, hopefully everybody who breathes supports clean air. It's important for you to contact your elected officials and to let them know that you care and that you're worried about it and that you'd like to see improved public transportation, for instance. And that way, hopefully, we'll start to see some funding for those for those kinds of measures.
Let's get another phone call in real fast. 1-800-444-9246, 1-800-444-WBHM. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, my name is Jane Trexel, and I'm a resident of Birmingham. I have a question and a comment. The question is, what is Alabama Power doing to encourage local businesses and residences to install solar panels, which could reduce the demand of electricity, which could be really, really beneficial, particularly in the summer months when we put such a load on the air conditioners? I know that 35 states now have what is called net metering, in that a person puts a panel on their roof, and if they use less than what they're producing, the power company will actually buy it back. And it seems to me that that would be a really a long-term solution for the power company, because it would be much cheaper to do that than it would be to build some more coal-fired generating plants. So that's the question I'd like to know, because I've called down and tried to get some information on net metering and how the power company might support my putting solar panels on, and I'm not getting anywhere. And the second comment is, there seems to be a little I know that the power company is in a strange position. It's a schizophrenic position, in that it's a utility supposedly serving the public, but at the same time it's a business whose bottom line is serving the stockholders. So I know that they talk about conservation on one hand, and on the other hand, in every one of my power bills, they're encouraging me to put in all-night security lights and stuff like that. So I just wonder if there is there shouldn't be some kind of high-level discussion at the power company deciding how they're going to serve two masters. Well, all that's right. My question and comment, and thank you. I look forward to your answer.
All right. Jane, thank you so much for your call. Jane from Birmingham. Mr. Bowers, you want to talk about that? Solar panels.
Solar panels. Two questions the lady had.
Yeah.
Alabama Power will work with whoever wishes to put solar panels on their roof around their home. I know there are some people here in the Birmingham area that have such installations. As far as net metering is concerned, for the power that those panels may produce, we will pay those people what is termed avoided cost. If we don't have to generate the power, then we pay avoided cost. That is the regulatory mechanism under which we operate under the Public Service Commission. As far as research into solar installations, we had one of the first solar systems in the country that was put in place in the early mid 80s. That was a solar generating station located in Alabaster, our general service complex, manufactured by a company called Kronar. So we've been very active over the years in doing research in ways that solar can be used and how it can be made more effective. Serving two masters in terms of conservation. We have had in place many, many years programs that provide a effort to aid the consumer to conserve. We've had energy audits that people can get to show them how they might more effectively use the energy that they have. Yes, if someone needs a security light, then we would like to be the provider of that security light.
But you can pick one of those up at the hardware store, too.
You certainly can, and you can put it in. I have a security light at my house, and I picked it up at the hardware store.
You did.
And I put it in.
Want to say that on the air?
Well, I also have another one, but we'll. But I think that when you say serve two masters, we really have an obligation to encourage people to more effectively use the product that we put out there. It's not as I mentioned earlier, one of the advantages of Miller Steam Plant is that it is coming back into serve our system. That is several hundred megawatts that will be brought back into our system that we will not have to go out and build additional sources.
Corey,
so to move, for us to look for ways to avoid having to construct new facilities is something that we do on a continuous basis.
We have this email question that's kind of interesting. Alabama Power, why can't the money that's spent on advertising with the birds be spent on cleaning up those power plants?
The amount of money that is spent on advertising is something that, number one, it's primarily public service advertising. It's advertising that is meant to promote safety.
Don't touch the power lines, things like that.
Don't touch the power lines. Stay away from power lines. It's advertising that also promotes other things. Some of it is image advertising.
But it's saying that to brew a pot of coffee costs a nickel or something like that, that's not necessarily public service. That's saying that it's cheap for electricity in Alabama.
That's correct.
Okay. Corey Masuka, years ago, the Regional Chamber of Commerce and city leaders tried to persuade lawmakers to force vehicle emissions in the Birmingham area, but it didn't happen. And it seems like the effort to make it happen has faded as well. There was a big push for a long time, and then all of a sudden we've heard nothing about it. Why?
I'm very aware of the issue. I'm not aware of the reasons why that legislation or the regulations have really been developed, or there's not been an impetus to continue the efforts to reduce emissions from vehicles by having an I&M program. I'm not aware of particular issues, but I do think that we would see a reduction, a significant reduction, in overall pollutant burden in Jefferson County and in Birmingham if vehicles were inspected on a periodic basis.
Jenny Dorgan, last week we heard about General Motors holding off on any major redesigns of its SUVs and trucks. Despite the high gasoline prices and the sour economy, are you getting the idea that Detroit isn't quite getting it, or that they're very slow to adapt? You know, we hear about these big, I mean, it seems like they're making them bigger.
Yeah.
Yet, it costs so much more to fill them up, $100, $150, whatever it costs to put these trucks together. And people buy them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it seems like sales of SUVs are down.
Sure. I think we are oftentimes, when profits are involved, we are often slow to change. But I would like to point out that I think we've been given a false choice between a healthy economy and a healthy environment.
You're saying there can be both?
I think they are actually dependent upon one another.
How so? Are you talking about utilizing new technology, things like that, putting people to work? You mentioned switchgrass. You mentioned these other resources. I mean, is that the key to an economic future?
I think it's part of it. I think that carbon regulations are inevitable. They're on their way to being implemented in the nation and in the state, and they're going to be expensive for our current economy. But it'll also stimulate the green economy, because basically studies have shown that green jobs will be created when we hire people to build the infrastructure in order to put non-polluting diversified energy portfolios in place. You can Google green jobs versus fossil-based to see a Senate testimony that shows wind and solar can produce almost three times as many jobs as fossil-based jobs.
All right, Jenny Dorgan, and we're talking about cars right now and emissions. I want to get back to the point about mass transit in the Birmingham area. Corey, we talk about how much an enhanced system, a bus system, maybe even a light rail system in the future would help get people off the roads. Is that doable in Birmingham, do you think?
Again, you know, I would hope it's doable, and I would hope that's something that we could have here in the future. But again, as far as specific reasons why, I'm not aware, but again, I think we could implement effective mass transit systems. We could see ultimately reductions, hopefully to reductions in air pollution in Birmingham and Jefferson County.
1-800-444-9246, 1-800-444-WBHM, if you'd like to call in and ask a question of our panelists tonight, and that is a toll-free call from anywhere in Alabama, 1-800-444-WBHM. WBHM. An email response now. Again, if you'd like to email something, news, N-E-W-S at WBHM.org. This is Michael, by the way, from Birmingham. Weren't coal-fired power plants granted a grandfathering in of the Clean Air Act that was meant to take them offline when better technology was available?
No.
No.
That's a misconception that has been portrayed by a lot of people, that coal-fired power plants had a grandfather that exempted them from the Clean Air Act. I go back again to what I said earlier, that if you trace the history of what has been done since 1970 when the Clean Air Act was amended and established the ambient air quality standard, there have been many, many examples of controls that have been required to be put on coal-fired power plants, just like there have been many, many examples of controls that were required to be put on steel mills and cement plants. It's a misconception that people have heard that somehow these things were given some type of grandfathering provision, and that's not true.
As I understand it, Steve, there's a lethal loophole in the Clean Air Act that exempts plants that were already built or under construction.
This is the grandfathering.
In the mid to late 70s from having to install modern air pollution technology as required by the new source review provisions. And in the 70s, as I understand it, power companies actually lobbied for that loophole because they claimed the plants would soon be retired because of their aged conditions. However, most of those plants are still around due to substantial repairs and modifications and continue to operate.
This is what we're talking, the thrust of sort of what we were talking about earlier with the Barry steam plant in Mobile, correct? The source of that lawsuit?
Right.
Do you want to address that?
And I would point out that if you look at the history of the other facilities that are regulated by the Clean Air Act, when the Clean Air Act was written, there were provisions put into law that provided that existing sources would be regulated under one set of rules and criteria, that being the ambient air quality standards. Other sources, what is called new sources, were to be regulated under technology-based standards. So when you make the, I guess, the comment that power plants were grandfathered, then if you look at any industrial facility that had to have some type of compliance program, all facilities received the same type of treatment in the Clean Air Act. That was the basic provision of the Clean Air Act, to establish one set of sources whose compliance would be determined based on ambient air quality standards, another set of sources whose compliance would be determined based on technology-based standards.
Jenny?
The NSR provisions that you're discussing require that power plants that are either built or modified in areas that do not violate the federal air pollution standards have to install best available control technology, and I think that's the technology that you mentioned. In areas that violate a federal air pollution standard,
such as this one,
the provisions require that power plants built or modified in these areas install what's called the lowest achievable emission rate technology. It's a tighter pollution control than the BACT, and it's required for each pollutant where there's a standard violation. And to my knowledge, the power plants that we're talking about have not been required to install those technologies because they were grandfathered.
Well, again, if there is a cement plant that is built in an area that doesn't meet the standard, then it has to install what is called the lowest achievable emission rate for a cement plant. I would think Corey could probably talk more to the regulatory standards, but the point being that the continual inference that power plants receive some type of, quote, special exemption is just not true. That's the way the law was written, and it was written based on deliberate considerations of ambient air quality standard regulation versus technology-based standards.
And I guess maybe that's where we talk about being a good corporate neighbor versus mandated controls, because as I understand it, if some of these plants that are in question had installed the technologies we just spoke of, then we would have been able to reduce their 2007 SO2 emissions by 281,529 tons and their nitrogen oxide emissions by 76,588 tons. And all this not to pick on coal burn and power plants in the state any more than any other industry, but the fact of the matter is the lion's share of our air pollution issues are because of outdated coal burning power plants.
Just a few more seconds, but I'm going to let you respond to that, and then we're going to go to a phone call. Willard.
I think we can sit here and discuss the issue ad infinitum.
Oh, we can.
The point is, we have installed technologies. We have reduced our emissions over 50%. We're in the process of spending an additional between $2 and $3 billion to address some of these issues.
All right. Let's go on the line and talk to one of our listeners right now. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, my name is Cheryl. I'm from Bessemer.
Hi.
I was actually wondering, the young lady had brought up windmills. I was wondering what her solution is when the wind does not always blow here in the state of Alabama. And also on the coal-fired power plant, how with the new technology, how she expects it just to be up and coming right away because of the fact that it does take time to construct and make bidding and all that stuff to build these new plants.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just switch over from coal to switchgrass.
Well, I think her phone just died. Okay, go ahead.
I think it's a very, very good question. It's an important question and one that should be addressed. I can't address all of the technology issues or challenges that might be related with wind power or solar power, but I will say that there's not one magic bullet, and it's going to take a combination of many of these types of innovations and technologies in order for us to be able to solve some of the major problems that we're faced with. And I certainly do realize that it's going to take a great deal of time to put an infrastructure in place in order to address some of these problems, and I just believe that we've got to use the resources that we have available to us now, these finite resources, the fossil fuel that we talk about, what we have remaining of those resources over a long-term period we need to use to implement an infrastructure that is sustainable.
Jenny and Nelson, I want to ask you both, you know, what do you say to people who are saying, you're just poo-pooing my good time? You know, you're telling me that if I have the wherewithal to buy a Hummer or some big SUV or go on a jet ski on the river or on the, you know, on some big large body of water, then I should be able to do that, shouldn't I?
Sure, to a certain degree we're free in the United States to do whatever we want to do, but we always encourage that people be frugal and keep in mind what we're leaving for our future generations, and I think that's where a lot of people are missing the boat. Don't really draw the line between the pollution we're causing now and what that's going to leave for future generations to clean up. We can do a whole lot by consuming and spending money, but I think what we're finding is that Americans are very consumerist oriented. It's a wasteful, consumptive way to live, and there are going to be ramifications for it. And we're not asking for people like the woman just mentioned to just miraculously poof, have things change and be green overnight. That's right. Not possible, and we know that. But if we don't start today, if we don't start subsidizing these new, better, cleaner ways that are more sustainable and efficient now, then we're going to be that much farther behind 5 years from now.
All right.
I would agree with you, Nelson, and I just would like to say again that we believe that air should be clean, healthy air should be a birthright for our children, in addition to some of the other environmental problems that they're going to inherit. And it hits home for you when someone you know has to take their child to the hospital on a bad air day like tomorrow will be.
Jenny Dorgan, thank you for joining us. Nelson Brook, we appreciate you coming in as well.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Corey Masuka from the County Health Department, and Willard Bowers joining us too. Willard, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Corey and Willard, both Willard with Alabama Power. And I'd like to thank all those who are here at WBHM, Tanya Ott, Andrew Yeager, Patrick Doherty, interns Colin Corello, Katie Turpin, and Marlon Glenn. That's on the line for tonight. Hope you got your question in. If not, there's more at our website, wbhm.org. We wish you a good night.